Today on the AV Podcast, we take a nosedive into the state of the NBA so far this season. I invite John Michael Nation on the show as we blow this podcast out into two parts. Part one, we'll be discussing our top five NBA rookies this season, the Toronto Raptors bench unit, the return of Kawhi Leonard, and the on-court dysfunction of the OKC Thunder. Then on part two, we break down the Ball family with LeVar removing both of his sons from school for the sake of basketball, you know, doing it his way. And we wrap up the podcast breaking down the mindset of being a professional basketball player overseas, dealing with the different cultures and lifestyle, the transition from career to post-career, plus a lot more. To listen to more podcasts, make sure you subscribe right here to SouthShoreAV.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAV.com. And once again, South Shore Ave is available wherever you listen to podcasts. You can tune in on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Stitcher under the name South Shore Ave. So go ahead and subscribe on that too while you're streaming this right now. Go ahead. Hurry up. It's the Ave Podcast with Kyle C on South Shore Ave Radio. Waves.
Welcome to the Ave Podcast with Kyle C on South Shore Ave Radio.
Welcome to the AV Podcast. My guest today was the second official guest that I had on any of my South Shore AV Podcast shows. He's a Jean Vanier and Ryerson University Hall of Fame basketball player, followed by a lengthy career overseas, and as much time as he dedicated to the game of basketball, he spent as much time or more pledging his energies to his Waves. Now, looking back, We probably should have considered him the Black Point Break for all the time he spent wave surfing on his hair. He was rumored to be sponsored by the same do-rag company that Allen Iverson used.
Oh, man.
And the waves were so crazy. They were so crazy back in the early 2000s, right? That upon meeting him for the first time, one of my friends immediately on site nicknamed him 730. Ladies and gentlemen, listeners of the pod, please welcome back Jan Michael Nation to the show.
Thank you.
What's going on, brother? What's up? What's going on?
Yo, when you said you're going to do an intro for me, I was like, I see why you couldn't stop laughing. Wow, man. You got me. Yo, face today, man.
Yo, listen, man. You took them way serious, man, back then. I'm giving you credit. You took them serious, man.
Yo, man, that was the game back then, man. That was the game, man. Just discovered my hair, and I was like, I was going hard for it, man. Wave cap and all, man. But yeah, you guys got me, man.
Yeah, man. Dax came through for you, man. Dax came through 100%. Was it the green gel or the blue one that you used?
Man, you're killing me now, man. You want the details? The secret?
Not really.
I can't put that out yet. Wait for the book.
Okay. All right. Just make sure you get it sponsored by Dax or one of them.
Yeah, man.
All right, so we're here to discuss having this basketball conversation about the NBA rookies, our favorite NBA rookies so far. And then we'll get into a little conversation a little bit later about about everybody's favorite subject, the Ball family.
Definitely.
But in the meantime, yeah, we got, you know, there's a lot of good rookies in this draft class this year. And, you know, I definitely want to get into our top five rookies that we have playing this season. So just to start, what is your overall thoughts in the season, but actually before we begin this list?
Okay, I have been really excited with all the movement that happened over the off season. I was very excited to see how things played out. With everyone going to the new teams, from like Kyrie going to Boston, how will LeBron do without Kyrie? How would OKC look? Houston, how will Philadelphia look with Embiid and Simmons?
Right.
The Raptors, I was very excited to see how things played out. And I know everyone was getting excited with the first couple of weeks, but you can't really judge a season from the first couple of weeks.
Right.
It's going to take time for these teams to find their way. So I've been watching intently and just excited. I just love watching ball, period. Good basketball, I should say.
Like, I didn't, it's funny, last season I didn't really enjoy it that much, but I find myself really enjoying this season, especially with the young talent that's been coming in.
There's
been a lot of great talent that's come in from the rookies, even some of like the second and third year players that's kind of developed this season so far, that's kind of jumped a level. I know the game just finished with the Lakers and the Knicks. We're taping this on Tuesday, December 12th, but he didn't have a good game today. But Brandon Ingram is a guy that I wasn't feeling really too much at Duke, and even last year, but this year, this guy's balling out, man. He's playing nice.
Yeah. I think the system that they have allows him to. So it's just building the confidence and just practicing good habits, right? Mm-hmm. He's in a good situation. He has good support. You got Magic Johnson in the head office to ask any questions, you know what I'm saying, for wisdom. So, and Luke Walton's a decent coach, especially coming from Golden State. Mm-hmm. So it's a win-win situation.
Yeah, and this is the time for like teams like that to develop, you know, certain players, you know, like himself, even like the Randles and Clarkson and those type of guys. Like I said, it's been an enjoyable season for me so far to watch. The one thing I see about the Raptors, I'm really enjoying their second unit. They've really been playing really well this year, especially Van Fleet, which, you know, I always kind of like this game, but you can see this, you know, with getting rid of certain guys and Corey Josephs and those type of guys, the opportunity came for him to shine, as well as DeLon Wright getting hurt, too. You know, we can't discount that.
Can I say something?
Yeah,
I want to say this. Last year, or the last time I was on your podcast, I wasn't a big Raptors fan because of the style of play that they played, as well as the offense that they ran.
Right.
I wasn't a big Dwayne Casey fan. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. This year, I am very impressed with the offenses that they run, as well as the defense, but more importantly, that second unit. They now don't have to rely. What they realized in the past, they are putting too much on the shoulders of DeRozan and Lowry.
Mm-hmm.
And they were falling apart. You can't go make a deep... Maybe in the regular season, you could reel off a whole bunch of wins. Mm-hmm. But in the deep end of the playoffs, it's not going to cut it. And you could tell with these first-round and second-round exits in the last couple of years, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really impressed. They're playing team ball. They're moving the ball. They have more movement. Player movement and ball movement. They got a good unit off the bench, which helps them. So if they get to a flat start, the bench could reel it back in again. So I'm very impressed, and I like their chances. And they're only going to get better. So I am excited to see what they can do this year.
Yeah, I think for me, their unit hasn't just been good. Like they've been great. That the second unit this year, and the fact that they're so young too. It's like the cherry on top of the sundae, man. Like
it's gonna pay dividends in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're just starting five, they get you off to a decent start, and then you start making your subs, and it's not drop off. That's a win-win for your coach. So no matter what, you have a good unit on the floor at all times. And what I like is they're playing offense well. They're playing good offense, but they're playing amazing defense to back it up. And sometimes their best offense is their defense.
Yeah, they and transition too.
Right. I'm very impressed. I wasn't a big Dwayne Casey fan, and I wasn't a Raptors fan because the brand of basketball was ugly.
Yeah.
And it just bothered me to watch.
But I think two important things happen. I think I've always said that the Raptors are dangerous when they share the ball. Like even their teams of the last 2 years prior to this one. Like, when they share the ball, when DeRozan and Lowry are sharing that ball, like, that's a dangerous team. And I think they had to – they more went to that. But I think on top of that, I'm not in the locker room, so I can't say for certain. But, yes, I agree with you. The one-on-one isolation ball doesn't work in the playoffs. That's where it always comes back to bite them in the ass. And it seems like they got backing from management to finally play this style. And I think maybe it kind of rang home in a sense. And plus, you know, the results, the proof was in the pudding, right? You saw, you can't deny the video, watching how, the team kind of self-imploded, especially, like, Milwaukee was an up-and-coming team in the playoffs last year, but, I mean, that series should not have gone six games.
No.
You know?
No, not at all.
If they were playing properly. I always say, too, like, if, thank God, Jabari Parker wasn't playing, you know,
One of my friends took a bet that Milwaukee would win, and it almost came to fruition.
No, seriously.
Right?
And if you look at the team, the way they're built, I don't know if, just to throw it back a little bit, like they remind me a lot of that 04-05 Pacers team. I don't know if you remember them, but like you probably would, because their best player was Artest and Jermaine O'Neal. But they had a ton of talent around, like that surrounded them. Like those guys weren't superstars, but the talent pool around them was so tight.
Steven Jackson was there too. Wasn't he?
Jamal Tinsley. You know, like I mean, Reggie Miller was playing like a you know, like a lesser role, but but like that team, the talent for talent, that team was tough. Like they surrounded those guys with a heavy set of talent, so that like even though they like Artest and Jermaine O'Neal weren't superstars, they were so deep. Yeah, exactly. They were so deep. So I feel like the Raptors are kind of. They kind of did it this way, and I keep saying that they're hoping that one of these young guys really steps out. You know what I mean? Yeah. And right now, I think the future is really bright for Siakam. The future's bright for Poto. Like, there's certain guys the future's looking really good for. But, man, my man OG Anunoby, man, I from day one, from once he got drafted, I was singing his praises, because I remember before he got hurt, I was watching some of those Indiana games, and that kid was a stud, Jan. Like, that... Like, there's no way that kid would have fell out of the lottery had he not got hurt. So the fact that we got him at, you know, I think it was a 23rd overall pick, that's a steal. Like, if he can come back and, like, I mean, he's already playing now, but you know he's not. You know, he's still working his way through the rhythm and just trying to get his knee right and stuff. So you know he's not. Mm-hmm. He might be 100% physically, but mentally, you know, it's going to take a little bit more time than that. But for me, I think the experience, the fact that he's ahead of schedule now is great. I can't wait to see him play next year when he gets a whole camp underneath his wings, and he's just training on ball. He's not just rehabbing, but he's actually training and working on his game to get better. Like, I can't wait to see his development in season two. Like, right now, anything he's giving me now is a bonus, but next year, like 2018, 2019, that's when I'm really waiting to see what kind of level he steps to.
Mm-hmm. What I like from the kid is he's a big body, he's athletic, and he can hit that set shot, the baseline three.
Mm-hmm.
He's hit that shot consistently. Yeah. I didn't know he could shoot that well. Not that he's shooting great, but he can hit that shot.
Yeah, it's much better than
anticipated. He's a reliable weapon from the perimeter. Mm-hmm. He plays amazing defense. He's very athletic. He's young. He has a good mind for the game. So, like, once again, the future, the possibilities are endless for him. It's all about what he does in the offseason. That's when you see the biggest growth in each individual player. But, he fits well with the starters, which is nice.
Yeah.
Which helps keep their depth once again.
Yeah, no question. My only thing is, man, it's they keep chopping away at Norm Powell's minutes, man. That's the only thing. That's the only problem. But it fits, though. Like, it's the right fit.
What? Like you said, Calvin, it's about what's – okay, when it comes to winning, if it makes a difference in the playoffs, then so be it. It's a sacrifice. It's a little sacrifices that you got to make as an individual for the greater good of the team, and until you win something, it's the journey traveled is that much more gratifying, because people are all buying in to something greater than their own selfish needs, right? Their own individual needs, I should say.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So, if losing a few minutes here and there for the greater good of the team is only going to help them, because they have a good starting unit and they also have a good bench.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and he'd probably get better shots for himself on the second unit.
And you know, and history has shown us that he's gonna, you know, like when the chips are down, especially in the playoffs, he's gonna come through. So
yeah.
So
we'll see. Time will tell. You mean with Powell or?
No, I'm talking about Powell.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. He's proved himself in the playoffs.
Yeah. He's proven himself to like he can play. Like, he can play bigger than his role. So.
Here's what I like about the season, the NBA season. You have the whole season to get familiar with each other, build good habits, get in a good rhythm, find your identity as a team, and then go for it in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So when the playoffs start, getting that good unit, those two good units, and the coaching will make it. We'll see. We'll see what Dwayne Casey has.
Yeah, and I think it's important that the fact that, you know, they've been on the road a lot, but they're getting some quality wins on the road. So I've been impressed by that more than anything else. Like the wins, like they've been getting a lot of good road wins so far. You know,
definitely.
I shouldn't say I wasn't expecting that, but it's nice to see, especially because you're watching some of these games and the second unit is what's pushing these victories like forward. Like,
exactly.
You know what I mean?
What they're doing right now is beating the teams that they're supposed to beat. And giving the top-tier teams a run for their money,
mm-hmm.
right? they're doing it at a more consistent level than in previous years.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Right? So, because they're right now, they're in third place, a game and a half behind Cleveland and four games behind Boston.
Right.
And so they're right where I expected them to be. Mm-hmm. I didn't expect Boston to come out flying out the gates like this. I thought it would be Cleveland, Toronto to be the top two teams.
Well, I thought Boston, and I'll touch on this, you know, when we start reviewing the rookies and such. But I even with the injury and stuff to Hayward, like, I thought Boston would still be tough. Like, I thought there would still be a tough one. I'll explain why, obviously, a little bit later. But okay. but I know my preseason rankings, you know, before the injury that happened, I had Boston, you know, obviously being one of the top two teams. But just because they're so deep, and then with Irving having a chip on his shoulder, and you know, mm-hmm. everybody having to prove something once again, like, it's like I thought going forward that was going to be like, I still think Cleveland is going to win the East, yeah. but I think Boston is they're really getting ready.
It's gonna be a series, yeah.
Yeah, they're really getting ready. But like I said, going forward, you know, like I said, there's a lot of great rookies, but you know, and I know we talked offline about this. The return of Kawhi Leonard, man. Like,
yeah.
I can't wait. Yeah. Like, I know people, you know, there's some people out there who think, like, whatever, he's boring. And, you know, everybody always associates the Spurs with being boring. And I understood it, like, almost 20 years ago when they were just dumping it into Robinson and Duncan and having Mario Elie and Jared Jackson shooting threes and such. Like, those days I get. But to me, I don't think the Spurs are a boring team. They've never been boring to me. I should say never been boring. But they haven't been boring to me for a long time. Like, the style that they play, if you appreciate basketball, they how can they be boring? I don't need my superstar, like, you know, because Kawhi Leonard is a superstar. Like, I don't need him to be, like, when I'm watching basketball, and this is just me, just for my personal taste. Like, I don't need him to be up in commercials. I don't need him to, you know, to be beating his chest and stuff. Like, and that's cool if he can give that to me. But that's not important. That's like a side dish. It's not that's not the main course of what you're looking from your franchise guy.
What impressed me with him and the Spurs, obviously Popovich, the system is amazing, but he was known as a defensive player, Kawhi Leonard, mm-hmm. and then he fine-tuned his offensive skills to complement his defensive prowess.
Yeah.
The way he shuts down players and takes away their strengths and just completely intimidates them.
It's almost emasculating. It's almost emasculating.
Yeah. Totally. And then what he does in the offensive end, the tools that he has off the dribble, the playmaking abilities. I'm really intrigued to see, once again, I was telling you earlier, how they acclimate him in with Aldridge. Mm-hmm. And how they, because Aldridge has been balling and they've been running the offense through him. So how they get those guys back in gear, or in rhythm, I should say, will be interesting.
First thing, a couple of things first. I think watching Kawhi's success is a testament to just the hard work of himself and the organization, because one thing you can't overlook, man, is development.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And the way the Spurs developed Kawhi, I think is such an amazing story, just because I truly believe that if Kawhi got drafted to, I would say, 28 other teams, maybe, he's not this guy. You know what I mean?
Probably, like, not. Yeah, yeah.
Like,
he got drafted into an amazing situation, because it's like anything in life. You're coming to a new situation. You're a little uncomfortable. There's a lot of pressure, but he was eased into everything. There was no pressure because he was in the background,
mm-hmm.
and they slowly but surely, gradually inched him in closer and closer. He started performing better. He understood. He picked up things quickly. That's why Pop loved him, because he's a cerebral player. He's a smart player.
Right.
Right? And he got him into the starting lineup, and then they started using him. And then he grew up overnight in the NBA Finals.
Yeah. Yeah, by that second Finals, well, obviously you won MVP, but you saw it. You saw the 3 to 4 years development, just it came right to a head right there.
Yeah.
You know, and then it's been smooth sailing ever since. Like, he's
Once again, the Spurs is an amazing organization from top to bottom. And it's all about this discipline and respect. And there's so many other teams that try to emulate that but fall off the wayside,
mm-hmm.
because it's from top to bottom.
Literally.
From the ownership, the management, the coaching, to the players.
The
locker
scouting, room,
the players.
Everything.
Yeah.
Everything. And that goes for sports in general, right? Like, there's a reason why teams like the Spurs, you know, and hockey teams like the Blackhawks You know, there's teams like that every year you wonder why are they always in the top of the conference? Like, you know what I mean? Like that's by design. Like that's not a fluke. And I know we were talking again offline about this, but just like last year before he got hurt against Golden State in the conference finals, same thing. It's like that was a situation where, you know, I'll always say again, that was not a fluke how he just dismantled Golden State that first game before, you know, he got his ankle rolled on.
Yeah.
That was by design what he did. Like that was not a
fluke. We got robbed of an amazing playoff Western Conference final last year. And that's why, once again, I'm so excited to see him back.
Yeah.
And see how he gets back and then see what happens in the playoffs. Like, you have Golden State. You got Houston now making noise. You got Portland's in the bottom. Minnesota's making noise.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting to see how who the final eight will be in the Western Conference, as well as looking at Oklahoma City, which doesn't make any sense to me. How they're at this stage of the season have a record of 12-14.
Oh, I can tell you why that makes sense to me.
Oh, yeah, go for it.
Well, you know what? Because everybody's trying to do the super team stuff. I understand it. I get it. That's the new wave now. But I think the issue is when you watch them play, when the shit, you know, when the shit goes down, when shit hits the fan, their reference point is going back to one-on-one ball. And if you're going to have a super team, Jan, like, especially if you look at their roster outside of those three isn't really that great. So you have to, like, really implore those guys to make everybody better and share the basketball.
Calvin, okay, you're right about the offense, but their defense is second best in the NBA. So, right? So you're halfway there.
Yeah.
You're halfway there. So here's my problem with Oklahoma City. I think Coach Donovan doesn't have a good enough... He's not coaching for the greater good of the team. He's letting them do their ISO plays too much, way too much.
Mm-hmm.
Guys are going to have to swallow their pride. I think it's still going to be a feel-out process. It's still like I said to you earlier, the second trimester of the NBA season. So they still got time, but it's coming along a lot slower than I anticipated.
Yeah, I mean, I'll agree
with that. They beat Golden State, so that says something.
But at the same time, everybody's up for Golden State too. So you got that as well. But I don't know, man. Like it's like watching them. Like, you know, I've caught some of their games, and that's the one thing. It's like they always revert back. But when they're dangerous is when they move that ball, because at this stage, like if you're putting a super team together, that's what makes Golden State so dangerous.
It's a trust thing. It's just trust and just getting familiar with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the coach. That's why I think it's vital as a coach. That's where the people skills and building relationships on and off the court will help. So obviously, the sets that I'm not a big Billy Donovan fan to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
I think his offense is rudimentary. They're very elementary, very simple. Obviously, with the talent he has, you could get away with it. But when you're playing against the top tier teams, they'll just key on your top two players and take them out.
Yeah.
You know,
you get exposed at a certain point.
Yeah, and so I think he has to up his. This is on him.
But
at this stage of the game, it's not working, Coach.
But you know what, Jan? Let me ask you a question then. So, do you think this super team in Oklahoma City is it too big for him?
Maybe. I don't know. I see. I'm not there, so I can't say.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not behind in the locker room. I can't say.
Right.
From the outside looking in, it just looks like he doesn't have control of the team,
mm-hmm.
right? Fully.
Because you know, I look at it, and I won't even take it as far as Popovich. You make a trade right now. You trade Billy Donovan for Bradley Stevens. What's OKC's record right now? Aren't they right there with Houston and Golden State?
Yeah.
Like, you don't even think twice about it, right?
Not even thinking twice.
Yeah,
about it.
So to me, I think that's you know, to answer my own question, I think this team is too big for Donovan. I don't think he's, you know, maybe the next job he goes, maybe he'll learn from those lessons. It's almost like I'll use this example. It's almost like when you're in a relationship and you meet your partner for the first time. You meet your girl or vice versa. You know, you got to set the table from the beginning, man. You got to set everything from the beginning. If you're in a situation where you know, hey, you know what? I got friends and, you know, they mean a lot to me. And, you know, every weekend we go play basketball, or every weekend we do this, or, you know, like, or the wife would be like, hey, you know what? Every weekend me and the girls go do this. You kind of set those barometers in place right off the top. You know what I mean? So so it's like, it's not a situation where it's like 6 months later, you're like, oh, where are you going? I'm going to go play ball with my guys. No, you're not. And, you know, so it's like a respect thing there. So I think with Donovan, I think him going to, you know, at the time, getting to coach KD and Russ at the same time as coming out of college, I don't know. Yeah. It's a tough situation to you know, how do you but set culture?
He didn't change the offenses that much.
No, and that's what I mean. Like, how do you set culture? Like, it's not even so much the offense, but how do you set culture that's to the point that you're being respected for your play calling and those different things right away? Like, how do you set that in coming from college? It's tough. Like, Bradley Stevens did it, but he had a chance to kind of do that from the bottom and build those guys from within.
Yeah, I think KD pretty much. By him leaving to go to Golden State, pretty much said, I don't think I can win with Russ, and this guy's my coach.
Right.
I'm going to go to Golden State. That's my best chance to catch a ring.
Right. So it's like looking at this situation, seeing that they're struggling, I'm like, I'm kind of looking at Donovan, because I'm like, they're not overly deep, but at the same time, it's like, okay, like it's, we're moving close to Christmas now. Like, how come this still, why are you still running? Like, we're seeing it. Like, you know what I mean? So you know they're seeing it.
Yeah.
At some point, like, you guys got to make these guys mesh. And really, it's a lot of pressure for him, because you only have a year to do this. Like, I know Russ signed his extension, but Paul George is still a free agent. You know, he might sign. You don't know yet. But if they struggle, they get to eighth seed and they go in the first round. I don't know if he's coming back to OKC, right?
Yeah.
And then that falls on his head.
Too early. Right now, it looks like a massive no. But it's too early in the season. Mm-hmm. Anything can happen between now and then.
Yeah.
And it's going to take a lot of trust between the players and the coaching staff to come together for a common good. And they just haven't made that across the board yet. And so it's just going to take more time. And we'll see. But you see, the lower the seed that they have heading into playoffs is going to hurt them. Mm-hmm. They need to keep pace with at least the top four or five teams so they could get at least a first round home court advantage.
The good thing is that the way the conference is being laid out so far this season, they're not that far away from getting the fourth spot. They're in the ninth spot right now, but they're really 3.5 games behind Minnesota, who's in the fourth spot right now. And surprisingly, the West isn't as strong as we all predicted that it was going to be, right?
Yeah,
so, like, outside of the top three teams, it's basically a crapshoot. You know what I mean? So any team could be in that fourth position. So, really, it's not like they're not like, as much as we're talking about them right now, like by April, we might not be surprised if they end up in the fourth spot, right? Like I said, there's still a lot of time, and a lot of teams are kind of, they're more mediocre than what we thought they were going to be. So,
that's
the one thing they got working for them. You know what I mean? So that's,
I agree. Yeah. I definitely agree with you on that one. It's interesting to see, because the top eight right now is Houston, Golden State, San Antonio, Minnesota, Denver, New Orleans, Portland, and Utah.
Right.
And OKC is outside looking in.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see, because pretty much the top three is pretty much solidified in a sense of Houston, Golden State, and San Antonio. They may flip-flop between the three of them.
Mm-hmm.
Minnesota is a distant fourth. And in Denver, quietly, number five, which is like out of nowhere. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah. We'll like I said again, the season is still a long ways away. Like, we're so far from May and June and all that right now. But you know, that's a good part. Like, there's still storylines to talk about, you know, at least so far, you know what I mean? So but you know what? Let's get to the rookies, man. So we got our offline conversations. You know, I wanted to rank our top five rookies that are performing so far this season, that, you know, at least the ones that we like. And, you know, looking at this draft class, like, a lot of these games is coming on TV, depending on which rookie's playing, I'm glued to my couch watching it.
Yeah.
I've been getting a special kick out of watching some of these rookies this year. But before we begin, any thoughts on this rookie class so far?
I'm very impressed with this rookie class from top to bottom. This rookie class has stood up more so than last year, obviously, with the likes of a lot of injuries and so forth.
Right.
But I'm quite impressed, because you can see their impact on their teams. They're getting good minutes, and they're getting a lot of game experience, which is only going to help them in the future. So I'm definitely impressed with this class.
So how we did it was basically we didn't tell each other what we were choosing for our top five rookies. So I'm going to find out what Jan's list is and vice versa. but we're ranking him from number five to number one. I'll start it first. Number five, my rookie at number five is Kyle Kuzma.
Okay.
To me, he's been every baller's favorite rookie. He's picked 27th overall, and honestly, he might be the steal of the draft. And he's outperforming his draft mate Lonzo Ball so far. You know, I don't think including tonight. Like, I don't think much has changed. And yeah. Initially, you know, looking at him in summer league and stuff, I was hearing so much about him. I initially thought he was a good 3-and-D player, but as the season's been progressing, like, he's been showing me that he's got much more variety in his skill set than I thought. And yeah, what I like about him the most is that he plays with a competitive edge.
Yes, he does.
And I'm looking at the stat line that he has. He's averaging 16 points, 6.5 rebounds a night, shooting 49% from the field, 76% from the line, 36% from three. He's second on the team in scoring. The future's very bright for him, man. Mm-hmm. I'm curious to hear, who's your guy at number five? I want to see if it's the same.
It's not the same. But hold on. Before we go any further, my question to you, and I'm going to say it again, is Ben Simmons considered a rookie? Because technically, he got injured last year.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't played.
You know what? I would say he is a rookie. It's a tough call. I understand where you're coming from. It's a tough call because he's a rookie because obviously he got hurt before even preseason. He didn't play any games at all. So for that fact, he is a rookie technically. But he's also been exposed to the NBA culture for a year. You know what I mean? He had a chance to work on his body. You know what I mean? He's gone to see everybody's idiosyncrasies. He's been able to, you know, just watch like the professionalism of certain players from his team to other teams and other players. And he's been exposed to that. Like, that's something he would not have had access to if he was still at LSU, you know, during the second, like, a sophomore year if he decided to stay. So, so it's a tough call. It's a tough call. I'm going by, because of my list that I made, it has him on it. So I'm going with him being a rookie. He's technically qualified as a rookie, even though I understand, you know, it was almost like a redshirt NBA season for him last year.
So you're okay with him being a rookie?
I'm okay with him being a rookie. Like I said, I have him on my list. I'm not going to say where yet, but I have him on my list. So I'm going to technically say he's a rookie. right now.
Okay. Number five for me was Donovan Mitchell from Utah.
You have him that low?
Yeah.
Son of a bitch. Okay. Why? Why you have him so low, dog?
First and foremost, he's had some big games, but regardless, can't take away the massive scoring games that he's had. But I'm about consistency and playing consistent over a long period of time. So it's great to drop 30, 40-point games, one-offs. It's great to have it. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. Can't take it away from him. He's a good player, very athletic, very smart, good defensive player. I like the way he moves. I like the way he attacks the basket. But I'm more looking overall. That's how I judge a player, about consistency, night in and night out. How consistent, what are you going to give me? Can I count on you to give me this amount of points, this amount of rebound, have a good plus minus every time you're on the floor as a rookie? That's how I judge a rookie.
I don't want to give away my answers for Mitchell so far, but but you know what? I think that earlier in the season, you know, he had to find his way a little bit. Plus, he still had like guys like Rodney Hood, you know. But Rodney Hood again is always an injury waiting to happen, unfortunately. So, like clockwork, he's missed, you know, a ton of games already so far to begin the season. And I think Donovan Mitchell's taking advantage of the point that I don't know if he's getting that starting position back. I wouldn't give it back to him. I think that rookie is very nice. I'll save my comments for him for later. But, I had him higher than that, man. I had him higher than that. But, But me was Kuzma just because, like, I was actually really surprised with how he played so far this year. I wasn't expecting a lot from him. I was hearing a lot of buzz. There's only so much I rate summer league stats and play. You know what I mean? So I didn't want to, like, just hitch my wagon to how he played in the summertime. But the transition from summer league to preseason to the regular season right now has been smooth for him, man. There hasn't really been too many hiccups. Like, he's been pretty much balling from day one.
No doubt. He's averaging 17 points, 3 rebounds, and 3 assists. He's definitely getting the minutes. But once again, I want to see the consistency. So, as of right now, I put him at 5.
Okay. I'll let you pick the number 4th pick first. I'll let you go first at number 4. Who do you got for your number? Your 4th favorite rookie of the season so far?
My 4th favorite was Dennis Smith from the Dallas Mavericks.
Okay. Why though?
I like his explosiveness. I like the way he attacks the basket. He has a good feel for the game. He doesn't over dribble. He knows how to run a team. He's very intelligent. My only gripe with him is that outside shooting. It's not consistent enough.
Yeah, not yet.
He's very athletic. He can get to anywhere, to the points he wants to on the floor. But with that said, I would prefer to see just to see him vary his attacks more.
Okay.
He had a battle against Kyrie Irving the other day, and Kyrie took him to school.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
Blew by him, crossed him over, step back jumpers, beat him off screens, catch and shoots, teardrops, got him up and under.
Hesitations, everything.
Completely dismantled him. But he showed him a complete game of how I could attack you, and there's nothing you could do to stop me. And it was amazing to watch.
He picked him apart. It was like one of those kids sitting in the field just picking out a dandelion line, just picking the leaves.
He got into his head and picked him apart. Exactly.
It was embarrassing. I remember that game. And listen, man, I've been championing Dennis Smith Jr. and Malik Monk coming into the league. I can't put Malik Monk there yet, obviously, because he hasn't shown improved on that side just yet. I still wish he was drafted by a different team, but that's a whole other story for another day. But man, you might kill me for this one, but go ahead.
He's at 14 points, four rebounds, 4 assists. I put him at 4 because I want his outside shooting can be improved,
right,
as well as his assists. As a starting point guard in the NBA, you got to have more assists, at least over 6 assists. Mm-hmm.
And this is why this rookie list, it's really intriguing this season. Because again, I love Dennis Smith, man. I still champion him. I still root for this guy. You know, I'll still sing his praises. Jan, I don't have him in my top 5.
Wow. Wow.
I don't have him in my top 5 right now. And I mean, and that could change before the year's over. You know, because I'm looking at it. I'm looking at it as my favorite rookies plus production, what they've been doing. So.
Okay.
So for me, and here's a surprise for me. This is a surprise for me at number 4. I can't believe I'm even ranking him this high. Lauri Markkanen. I didn't see this coming, man. I can't lie to you. I saw a couple of games from him in Arizona last year. You know, I thought he was pretty good. And the fact that he's obviously a freshman, 7 feet tall, can shoot the three. You know, and he can mix it up a little bit inside. I'm like, okay, you know what? You know, he's pretty good. Let's see what happens. I'm like, everybody's comparing him to to Dirk Nowitzki, but I'm like, yo, so was Bargnani, right? So we don't know what this guy's going to be yet. But then two things, obviously. Well, one major thing, he really benefited from that Portis-Miritich fight.
Oh, big time.
Huge. That was like gold from heaven. Like that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, really, he was supposed to go there, come off the bench, you know, get probably about 50 minutes a night to start, you know what I mean, and just slowly, you know, be brought along. But because those two knuckleheads got into a fight, they basically don't even realize that that fight might have ended their careers in Chicago at this point. It might have, like,
they don't need either one of them. I think what they're gonna do is let those guys play and let them audition for themselves, to raise their stock, to get them out of there,
get them the hell out of there. Yeah,
yeah.
Because at this point, like, Miritich didn't pan out to be the player that we thought he was gonna be coming out of Europe, and Portis, I mean, he wasn't a lottery pick, you know, but he was slated to be a good role player, you know. These guys were rocking back and forth. Obviously, that incident wasn't just a one-time thing. This has been going on. They've had tension for the last couple of years. But for it to boil to the point where these guys are actually fist-fighting, like, these guys are idiots. But Markkanen took complete advantage of this. And at this point, he's not giving that starting job back.
His numbers are 14 points, 14.7 points, so pretty much almost 15.
Mm-hmm. Eight rebounds. Yeah.
That's impressive. And one assist. 1.3 assists. The 8 rebounds is impressive.
Where this team is right now, like, they're really starting from the bottom, so at this point, you may as well develop the young guys that you have, I mean, you don't get much younger than Markkanen, who's 19 years old. You know, you got LaVine coming. He's coming back by, I believe, January. Sometime in January, he'll be back. You know, Chris Dunn has actually come back. He's playing well. You got some good veterans with Robin Lopez. I know he loves to read a lot of comic books, but he's actually been a good vet to Markkanen this season.
And,
you know, and honestly, yeah, just I wasn't expecting him to play this well, but I watched a couple of Chicago games.
No one did.
No.
He was probably like 2 years away from 2 years from playing, if anything.
Yeah.
They thought he was be more of a project and see what they could get out of him, but he's definitely flourished. And
yeah.
It just comes to show you hard work never goes unnoticed, man. And this kid was ready.
He was definitely ready, and sometimes you got to be lucky to be good,
exactly.
Right? Because that dumbass fight has basically accelerated his career faster than we all thought it was going to be, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Shout out to Portis and Miritich. Those guys are fools, man. Straight up fools. Yeah. Like, honestly, they don't realize what they did. Like, they're not getting that spot back. It's a wrap. Yeah. Like, that kid, because I know right now he's missed a couple of games due to back spasms, but once he comes back, he's getting that spot. He's not losing it. You know what I mean? Like, it is what it is now. Like, I think he's done enough already to solidify his position going forward.
Into the season, they got a good rhythm going. Why mess that up? So he's definitely going to keep him. It's working. He buys in. The other guys, he's earned the trust of the other veterans on the team.
Yep.
So it's a win-win for Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just at this stage, it's all about development and trying to see how many wins they could get. They're obviously they're not going to make the playoffs. So they're trying to get some more draft picks. Right?
Yeah, exactly. So you may as well play him.
Only benefit them in the future.
Yeah, no, for sure. All right, so my number three rookie, let me see if you have this guy. Jason Tatum.
Okay,
I guess you don't have him on number three. All right. All right, so let me just talk about him a little bit.
So
he's the most polished rookie to come out of this draft. Anytime somebody says, hey, this guy's the most polished player coming out of the draft, for some reason, that player is always capped with an upside. And I don't think, in this case, that should mean that for him because, again, he doesn't turn 20 until April. So right now, you're already seeing it. And like I said before, you know, so a few minutes before, I was saying that I don't really put a heavy amount of stock in Summer League. But watching his fundamental skills in some of those Summer League games, I was like, yo, I don't have to worry about this guy. This guy's ready. Like he proved it to me that much. Just the fundamental skills that he showed, his footwork, the way he created space for his shots, the up and unders. He had vet moves. The comparison point is always Paul Pierce, but he had those crafty vet Paul Pierce moves already at 19. Like it was sweet. And to me, honestly, I like this game so much, Jan, that even when Hayward broke his leg, even from that point, I was still like, man, I don't know how much Boston's really going to fall off because that's how much I like Tatum as well as Jalen Brown. Like, those guys, and they showed it to you, too, even in that game against Cleveland opening night. Like, those guys, they weren't afraid of the moment because that was a big game. Obviously, the whole world's watching opening night, Cavaliers playing Boston, Kyrie versus LeBron. All the lights is on them, you know what I mean? And then you have that major injury that happens, and those guys stepped up.
Yeah, they came to play. They came to ball.
So that's
once again, the system, and you got a good coach. When you got players that believe in their coach, they will run through walls to play hard for him. Why? Because they believe in what they're trying to accomplish is going to help them. It's the best way to get them to win. And they believe.
Yeah.
They believe and they play for each other. And it's beautiful basketball. They move the ball. Kyrie, he's a quarterback. He orchestrates everything. Him and Horford are balling right now. And everyone's just chipping in. They're pieces to the pie. Jalen Brown is balling.
Oh, man.
He's really, everyone's just they play well together. They got a good nucleus, a good starting five. I don't know how good their bench is, though, down the stretch.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it's going to be a problem. So there's a lot on the top 6-7 players for them to do well. We'll see in the playoffs.
Mm.
But once again, Tatum, he's a good. I was very impressed with him as a player. He's averaging 13 points, almost 14 points, 5.7 rebounds and 1.3 assists. What I like about him is he mixes it up very well. Mm-hmm. Of course, he has a good perimeter outside shot. He can attack the basket. He can beat you off the dribble. He can pass. He's got great footwork. You cut him off, he's got great footwork to counter any move that you have to get a shot off. And it's not a forced shot. It's a natural shot within the flow of the offense.
Right, right.
And it's amazing to watch because it shows that his maturity as a player, but also the basketball IQ is very smart as well. So the future is bright for that young man.
Oh, very, very much so. And I'll even add to that, Jan. Isn't he, correct me if I'm wrong here, but isn't he the league leader in three-pointers per game? Three-point percentage per game? He's shooting 50%. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, his shot, yeah. I mean, I don't know how much he's taking per game. I'm trying to look it up right now. But percentage-wise, I mean, this guy's at the top of the league right now. I mean, and that might change. You know, who knows if he hits a rookie wall or not. But, I mean, like right now, I'm looking at his splits. He's shooting 50% from the field, 82% from the line, and he's shooting 50% from three. Like, that's obviously Hayward's injury, you know, has allowed him to get a little more to grow. You know what I mean? But but I think it's also a great place for his game to develop. Like, and his type of game especially, that smart, moving without the basketball, you know, getting to certain spots. Like, I think that's it's a great place for his particular game to develop. And he's getting real, real experience on a contending team.
At a young age.
Yeah, at a very young age. Mm-hmm. And I think going forward, that is going to work wonders for his development.
Just imagine if Hayward didn't get hurt.
Oh, man.
Wow.
Wow. Right? Right?
So.
Because he still would have started.
Yeah.
He still would have started.
Regardless, but they would have had a good year under their belt of rhythm. That will, for this year, I don't think this. I just don't think Boston's good enough to beat the Cavs, but I still think they'll give them a good go. But the future is bright for that whole group. I hope Mr. Hayward gets a speedy recovery, and we'll see next season when he comes back. But this year, I'm very impressed with Boston, and I'm definitely impressed with Mr. Tatum.
Who's your number three guy?
Okay, my number three guy was Kyle Kuzma.
Okay, all right.
Right, I had him at number three.
I can't really argue with that, to be honest with you.
But. Yeah. No, once again, the rookie, there's not a big gap between these players.
No,
they
not
are
at
all having impactful parts to their individual teams, and they're scoring, they're coming in, and they're ready. So it takes kudos to them. Also, their AU coaches building them up, their individual coaches in the summertime, and just the summer league getting that game experience. So kudos to them so far.
Kuzma, I can't really argue because, like I said, he came on like gangbusters, and I think when Larry Nance Jr. got hurt, you really saw what he can do.
What he can really do.
Yeah.
Right? They kind of have a logjam of threes and fours in their offense, so I don't think Randall's in their immediate future.
No, he's not.
I think if they don't trade him by the trade deadline this coming up straight season, he's definitely going to be gone in the offseason.
Yeah, they'll let him go. Because you think he's a restricted free agent coming in next season, so they'll probably just let him go.
Yeah, they're not going to pay. They're not going to pay him.
Even though he's playing well too.
He's playing. He definitely is playing well.
Yeah.
And you know, you can tell he wants to stay there.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, why would you want to leave LA?
I know.
You know what I mean? Like, just the franchise and the city. You know, you're a young guy. Yeah. You know, working into your own, and the franchise is finally being stable for the first time since he's been there. So you can kind of see the future. So you know all these guys are auditioning to be a part of that, right? So. But you're right, though. There is a logjam, and some of those guys will be moved for sure. Mm-hmm. I think Kuzma is probably the one guy that they can, especially in this new NBA where you don't need the bruising power forward to average 12 to 15 rebounds a game and park his ass under the paint. You know what I mean?
Like, he has Alonzo Ball averaging almost almost 7 rebounds a game.
Right.
So
yeah,
it's more team rebounding than the dominant rebound in this day and age, right?
Exactly. So. And if you can stick out, like if you can shoot that three and slash and everything else, you know, that 3-and-D kind of style, plus mix it up a little bit, I think your future is going to be brighter. And then looking salary wise, like why would you keep Randall when you can keep this kid for a fraction of the cost and exactly. giving you pretty much the same production, right?
Yeah.
So, and younger, you know. Yeah. So at the end of the day, like obviously you're going to go with that. Who's your number two pick?
My number two pick was Jason Tatum.
Okay.
I didn't want to give it away right away. When you said Jason Tatum as number three, I don't disagree. Like there's not a big gap between each of these players.
Right.
But I'm basing my five on the impact on their teams and how important they are. So I think Jason Tatum has had the biggest impact on the Boston Celtics of all the rookies so far out of the top five. He has a big role, and he's been consistently doing it from the day one till now. Mm-hmm. So, will he be leading the league in three point percentage by the end of the year? Probably not. But the fact that it's at 50% is quite impressive for a rookie.
Yeah, especially at this stage. So, especially at this stage, still right? Like it's.
Yeah.
I know it's early, but we're about 25 games in. You know, you're still shooting that kind of percentage. That's impressive.
Mm-hmm.
That's impressive.
Definitely is. So. Yeah, so yeah, I had Jason Tatum at two, and I'm really they have a 23-6 record. He's playing a lot of minutes, and I need to see how the season ends, how they hold up the rigors of an 82-game season, because sometimes the rookies haven't hit that wall yet.
Yeah, right? No, it's true.
So that comes towards that 60-70 game range.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, after the All-Star break is when your legs get, especially with some of these rookies who. And let's face it, probably all these rookies that we're talking about are going to be a part of All-Star Weekend. So let's see how they recover once, because they always say that weekend takes a lot out of you, right? There's so many commitments outside of not even just the rookie game, but like just all the press commitments.
You're not promoting your team. You're promoting yourself as a brand. Mm-hmm. You're not promoting yourself as a brand.
And the game as a whole, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So just all the press commitments and, you know, obviously the parties and different things like, you know, and now that you get a week break for All-Star, I mean, that helps too, because you can leave by Saturday night and still go to like St. Bart's and go hang on the beach for a few days and relax, get some sleep, you know, just sip Mai Tais and just watch the waves. You know what I mean? Like
it's just funny. It's so funny to me to see how the NBA, how they run the league and how the NBA, like, not to say they're in perfect harmony with the players union, but there's a mutual respect between both sides. The NBA has made efforts to accommodate the players because they finally realize that the players are very vital. And if you keep them happy, everyone else is happy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Extending the season, also extending All-Star Weekend, very smart.
Yeah, to extend
it. Let the guys enjoy, even though it's being an athlete is one of the greatest jobs in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But still, you gotta take care of your players, your employees. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Rest and recovery is everything as a professional athlete, as you know, right?
Yeah.
Like you gotta be able to have those periods where you can let your body recover, right? So even if a 2-day difference, and starting the week 2 weeks early is a beneficial point to those guys too, because I mean, at the end of the day, it's 82 games. You can't really run away from the grind, but. But if you can sneak some rest here and there in between that, cut down on some of the back-to-back games, which they've done with this new schedule, and even adding 2 days to the All-Star break, that pays dividends.
You're going to see in another 10 years, 20 years, the level of injuries go down in comparative years to what they've been doing in the past.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see it. You'll see the stars will be sitting their players less and less, so people are not going to get pissed off when they, you know, when they come out to buy a ticket to hopefully see LeBron and he happens to be sitting out in the back-to-back.
Right.
You know?
it's true, but to touch on the point that you're making before, like, at the end of the day, why would you piss off the product, right? If the product is talking to you and saying, hey, you know, we could be better if we got a little bit more rest. Like, we understand.
They're rebelling.
Like,
the coaches and the players were rebelling.
Yeah.
It's too much.
And it's funny because, like, you know, you heard Barkley and all these guys, and I love those guys, but you hear those guys, like, ripping, like, the new players with regards to, like, complaining about the scheduling. But you know what? At the end of the day, if back in those days, if they had an opportunity to get more rest, they would have jumped on that, too.
Same way. Yeah. Sometimes I respect what they have to say.
Yeah.
But sometimes they're rigid in their thoughts and their opinions. The game has evolved. What you did in the past is in the past. The game's changed now. It's moved forward. I got to say, for the better. It's evolved. The three-point shot, it'll be hard. Some of them would do it because they're just super athletes and they're just super talented. But some of them wouldn't be able to survive. Like, it'll be interesting to see Shaq in this era. He would, no doubt, dominates.
Oh, it would be ridiculous. I think it would still be ridiculous. But yeah, that's a scary thing. You might have Shaq having to shoot a three. Yeah.
But his game set, his skill set will be different.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, once again, the game's changed. And I think for the better, it's evolved. It's more exciting to the average fan, the casual fan. And that's why basketball ratings are up and NFL is dropping by the wayside.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So,
and to touch on that point, I think that's what the NBA sees. They see an opportunity. I mean, it's hard to touch the NFL right now. The NFL is king, but they see some holes there. They're smart. That's why there wasn't, like, when it came to renegotiating TV contracts and different things, and like, they did all that stuff quick because they understand, like, they're not going to mess with the product now. They have a chance to, you know, in the next 10 years to maybe do some real damage to, you know, to take some of the food out of the NFL's plates, right? So, and that aspect, like, they're really smart in terms of trying to get the deal done and just working everything out. My number two guy was Donovan Mitchell. I've been really impressed with what he's been doing right now, man. And you know what? Like I said again, I think that some of the consistency point is the fact that he was coming off the bench behind certain guys. And once, like, again, the guys like Rodney Hoods and those type of players got injured, Joe Johnson got injured, he had a chance to jump in and make a difference. And especially, you know, Rudy Gobert went down for the 4 to 6 weeks. Not to say he's an offensive player, but, you know, he's a franchise guy. They had to turn to somebody, and he benefited the most out of all those injuries. So it's kind of like a marketing thing. Well, except, you know, nobody punched their teammate in the face. But he benefited from all of that. And, like, yeah, he's had some big games, but, he's been pretty consistent the last month, I would say, man. Like, he's been pretty consistent. He's averaging 17 a game. Like, it's like, you know what? It's funny. Like, watching him play, and maybe it's just me, but the way he kind of attacks the basket, especially with his physical dimensions, he kind of reminds me a little bit of a young Dwayne Wade.
Yeah, he does. He does. He does. He definitely does.
A better shooter at this stage, but.
Definitely a better shooter. But yeah. Dwayne, a poor man's version of Dwayne Wade. Let's say that.
Yeah, I'm not saying Dwayne Wade, the fully functioning superstar.
Dwayne Wade was a special talent.
Right, right.
The way he attacked the hoop, he was on another level.
Mm-hmm. But this guy, like, watching him play, because the biggest thing, I didn't see him play in college, but the biggest thing that I remember going into the NBA season was the fact that he was my height, he was 6'3", but he had a 7-foot wingspan, which I've never heard of that before. That's just, insane. I've never heard of that before. That's ridiculous. You know, and you're watching him the way he, even on defense, like how guys are trying to attack him, like he gives some guys certain problems just because his reach.
Yes, he does.
Nobody's expecting the reach. They're like, what the hell? Every time they go to shoot a shot, you know what I mean? So for me, I think Utah really got a steal, man. I know he was a lottery pick, but I think they got a real one there, man. Like, it's
they got a good player to add to what they have. They obviously lost Hayward to Boston, but they have a good nucleus. They have a good system. They have a good coach, and they have a good set of players that buy into what the coach wants. And they're you know, that's why they're always competing for the playoff spot every year.
Right.
They play good basketball, good team basketball, and he gives them that scoring punch of a veteran, and that's a bonus because he's a rookie.
Yeah.
And he's only going to get better.
Oh no, he's going to get. I think he's.
I agree. Like, I'm not mad at you for putting out number two, but I want to see more consistently. If he can continue this, then he'll go up to number two on my list. Mm-hmm. But I'm predicting he drops off. I just think he's hot right now. He's rolling. Got everything just rolling for him. The sun, the stars, the moon, the earth, and his ass are all lined up right now. He's on a good rhythm, and he's riding that wave. So we'll see, with more games under his belt, if he can keep this up.
Yeah, I'm kind of betting he can keep this up. I don't know. This is I know he's hot, but this is a pretty good stretch, man. I think he can keep this up. And again, if you talked to me 2 weeks ago, I might not have had him this high, personally, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. I might have had Tatum this high. But I've just been really impressed with how he's been playing. You know, and I sat back and watched a couple of Utah games, and I'm like, no, this kid is for real. I think it's more than a hot spread. I think this kid is for real. That's my personal opinion. But I think, you know, I think this kid is, I think he's a real one. Like, I think he's for real. So Ben Simmons is my number one guy. How about you?
Okay, Ben Simmons is my number one guy.
Okay, no, all right.
Okay, hold on. No, joke. No, Alonzo Ball, number one. Come on, guy. Come on.
Of course.
No, Ben Simmons, man. All the way.
Okay.
All the way.
You know what? I mean, what's there to really talk about, really? I mean, this guy's the next evolutionary version of Magic Johnson, where he could be. He could be that already.
I say Magic Johnson, but with a LeBron. You can see the influence of LeBron to his game big time.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the height, the size, the quickness, the way they attack the hoop. What intrigues me is his game is a little bit of a throwback with all the flip shots he has around the basket.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
Like, he doesn't take traditional jumpers or one dribble pull-ups. He has all these little flip shots, running hooks, off the glass, teardrops, all these runners, different shots that are kind of throwbacks to the 80s, maybe a little 90s flair in his game.
Mm-hmm.
I love his passing. His passing is amazing. But I also like the fact that he rebounds. He's an amazing rebounder.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So
Would you look at me as crazy if I thought he's arguably one of the top 25 players in the NBA right now?
I would agree with you.
Okay. I think he's top 25 right now.
Yeah. His impact on the game is nuts. His imprint on the game. Like, I could tell when they played Cleveland a couple games ago.
Yeah.
He was kind of, you could tell, he's trying to figure out how to attack LeBron, because he was guarding LeBron for the majority of the time.
Right.
He's still trying to figure it out. This is his first year. But I'm really impressed with him. I definitely like his passing ability. He's very poised.
Oh, man.
Very poised.
Yeah.
He's averaging 18 points, 9 rebounds, and 7 assists. I just like the way he's a stat stuffer. He can impact the game without scoring.
Yeah.
That's what I like about him.
And Jan, let's add this. You're saying he's averaging 7.7 assists a game. He's fourth of the NBA in assists. He's second in steals. This kid's still getting his feet wet. You know what I mean? More or less.
Yeah.
He's amazing, man. Like, so who would have thought? I can't even say who would have thought, because we all all knew how talented these guys were. But Philadelphia arguably has two of the top 25 guys in the league right now on the same team. And they're, what are they, 22 and 20?
Yeah, I agree.
It's insane.
I agree.
It's insane. I mean, obviously, it all comes down to health, but would you be surprised if these guys are, you know, battling Boston to be a finalist team in 2 years? No, I wouldn't. In 2 years. I said in 2 years. In 2 years.
They need some time on their belt.
Yeah.
More experience. And then more seasoning. But definitely, I definitely see them making noise in the years to come. Once again, this year is to get everyone get acclimated to the system, to get used to each other, playing with each other, building an identity for the team, and then trying to get that playoff experience, right? The goal is to make the playoffs, be a middle-of-the-pack team, and see what happens in the playoffs. Maybe it's all about the seedings and where you get locked up against, and then go all in.
And,
right.
And for them, it's not even about them going far in the playoffs. It's just about getting their beak wet. It's just about experience.
Yeah.
I don't even care what seed you get. It could be the fourth. It could be the eighth seed. If you just get in there and just, even if you get you lose a series 5 games, you just want that experience.
Yeah.
You know, you just want that experience. Now, question: Is it too late to make Joel Embiid also a rookie? We can't make him a rookie, right? No, can't make him a rookie.
No, you can't. You can't.
Okay.
You can't.
I really want to talk about him, but. Okay. It's fine. That's the player in the East that I've been looking forward to watching the most. And, you know, he hasn't let me down, man.
He's going to be a unique talent, because he's physically dominating, but he's also agile on his feet. He's got an array of shots around the basket, counter moves, face-up jumpers. He can shoot the three. He can handle the ball. He can pass the ball very well.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just on the offensive end. The defensive presence is amazing. He's a great defensive rebounder, shot blocker. He has great timing, great anticipation skills, and he's only going to get better. I would wish he would stop talking as much on social media, because I think that's more of a distraction. But he's a character, so I guess it coincides with the whole DNA of who he is. You know what I mean? Mm. But very impressive. Very impressed with his skill set and his mindset. He's bold about being the best guy, the best big man in the game. And he's out to prove it.
Yeah.
And he's going to bring it. You know he's going to bring it. So you can only respect him for that.
And honestly, Jan, like, I don't even mind the trash talking. I think it's like a healthy and pleasant change. You know what I mean? I don't even mind the personality. I like it, actually. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, and it's genuine. I think that's probably the biggest thing. I think if it was inauthentic, I would probably see right through it. But you look at his personality, I just think it's genuine. So I appreciate it for what it is. Yeah, and just going back to Simmons for a second, really quickly before we move on, like, the only thing in his game, obviously, like, he desperately needs to find a jumper, like, yesterday. I know that's going to take some time, but because what's going to happen is right now in the regular season, especially, you know, you're only seeing a team once, and then you got to focus on another team the next night. You're not really focused on locking down a guy for an extended period of time. But, you know, when the playoffs come, you know, the fact that he doesn't have a jump shot, that's going to come back and haunt him, I believe, you know, during the playoffs. But
he definitely has to work on it, mm-hmm. and it's something that he has to prove upon in the offseason.
Yeah.
He needs it just to keep the defense honest, because they're going to start, after a while, they're going to key in on the expression of playoffs. It's a half-court basketball, and you got to space the floor,
mm-hmm.
and you need, like, J.J. Redick alone and Covington,
yeah. Who's been a pleasant surprise himself this season, too.
Another surprise for them. But if he could complement them with a mid-range, at least a mid-range, consistent mid-range, it will help.
Oh, yeah, big time.
I'm not saying three-point specialist right now. I'm just saying mid-range, it'll help.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, as great as he's playing right now, like, he's going to be the guy that will average a triple-double, I think, at certain points in the season. Like, and it's gonna feel really genuine, not unlike Russell Westbrook. I'm sorry, not to take a shot at Russ, but it's because he looks like he loves to pass. That's what I love about his game so much. He loves to pass.
You can tell he's trying to figure out when to score. And once again, playing the point guard position is such a hard position to play, because you're the coach on the floor. You're the quarterback. You got to spearhead the guys, get everyone in their spots, run the offense efficiently, get the guys the ball in their sweet spots. You have so much demand on you, and you gotta make the right decisions all the time.
And you still gotta try to feed yourself too.
Yeah, exactly. So he's trying to figure out when to score, when to set these guys up. It's all a process, as they say. but it will be interesting to see how the second half of the season goes. Once again, we're in the second trimester, so there's still a lot of ball to see, and the development to happen between now, the All-Star break, and the second half of the season.
To me, that's like the biggest thing, the difference between, I think, him and like Alonzo Ball, is just because, don't get me wrong, I respect Lonzo Ball's vision as well. I think he's got great vision, but I think Ben Simmons' vision is way more dangerous because he's consistently more aggressive in attacking the defense. Yeah. Like, that's what makes you a great passer. I remember hearing Isaiah Thomas, he said it best, like, if you want to be a great passer, you got to think score. You got to think aggressive. When you're that talented, you're always going to attract attention, and once you do, that's when you can let your vision and your imagination just run wild at that point, which is what he does half the time, you know. And to me, that's what makes him a better passer. He's just more aggressive, period, and just attacking all the time. Like, whereas Lonzo Ball, it's like, it looks like he's sometimes you look like he's just cruising, too cool for school, and it's like, that's cool at some points, but you got to be a dog, man, at certain points, man. So, you know, and this kid plays with an edge. Like, I really like this guy, like, on all levels. To me, he's the best rookie. I don't see anybody taking his crown for Rookie of the Year. But again, there's a lot of great rookies in this class this year. And this list might change a couple of times before the year's over, you know,
for
sure.
Without a doubt. Without a shadow of a doubt, it'll definitely change, because the season's up and down. These rookies are all in different situations, and it'll be interesting to see how they finish come the second half of the season, which I'm looking forward to watching it unfold, so to speak. So we'll see. Time will tell.
Yeah, time will tell. Now, let's have some fun a little bit. Let's pivot to the Ball family. Okay, so here's what we're going to do. We'll save this part of the conversation for part two of the podcast. All right, so once I'm done talking with you guys, make sure you click on part two of the podcast, where we'll get into the Ball family and the removal of LiAngelo and LaMelo from school, as well as the expectations and experiences of the life of an overseas pro basketball player. Thanks for tuning in to part one of this episode of the AV Podcast. You can check us out and subscribe to the podcast on the blog on SouthShoreAV.com. And check us out on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Stitcher. It's the AV Podcast with Cal C on South Shore AV Radio. Okay, go ahead and check out part two of the podcast. Go ahead. Hurry up. Go.